The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by this show. We are always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about something very, very interesting, cyber. We talked about this before, cybersecurity, but there's an evolving field. You're starting to hear about cyber intelligence. What is cyber intelligence? You know, there's a field that's, you know, starting to evolve, and it's not just protecting people from cyber attack, but it's also being a little bit more proactive and trying to find out who these threats are. Who are the people who are, you know, acting these threats upon companies, upon our government, upon the world, individual people? What's their motives? I mean, so this is the area of cyber intelligence. We're talking to Lance James. He is the director of cyber intelligence for Deloitte & Touche, and they're a company who's done a lot of federal contracting, but they also do a lot of consulting for private sector and multinational companies and everything else. Lance, thank you for being on Fed Access.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, Lance, you know, when the president announced just recently, he announced that they are going to be developing this new agency, something almost kind of in line with NCTC, the National Counterterrorism Center, that's under the Office Director of National Intelligence, a new cyber intelligence agency. Two questions. One, given that you were in charge of cyber intelligence for Deloitte & Touche, one, what is cyber intelligence? And then two, what's your thoughts on this new agency?
Yeah, cyber intelligence is it's an interesting thing, and I'll be honest, it's some of it in the commercial side still being defined compared to actually on the government side. But cyber intelligence is a process in ways that you can, if you think about cyber as a domain instead of, you know, keep the concept of intelligence, but domains such as cyber also would be land, space, air, sea, and then cyber being yet another domain. It's the gathering of intelligence and being able to process and analyze them and disseminate them so that people can make solid decisions about, you know, defending their networks or taking action against something. Or, you know, even on the commercial side, it plays into legal areas where, you know, they may file lawsuits or they make arrests. For instance, like, you know, if you have FBI, their decision would be counterintelligence decision to make an arrest or things like that. So, but it's basically the gleaming of information and turning it into intelligence that can allow us to act accordingly. And the focus these days in cyber intelligence is to get as preemptive or proactive as you can so that we can get ahead of these threats.
You know, it used to be that time, and I think this is where you're going. You know, it used to be a time that it was just more about, you know, closing the gaps and closing the holes and doing that threat assessment of the network to kind of see, all right, make sure that somebody can't get in this way. But it seems to be a very, very big evolution. What was the evolution to say, now we need to know who the people are, now we need to go after them in a certain kind of way? What was the change?
2003, phishing.
Okay.
So everybody was used to, you know, when you know how everybody asks for trends the next year, you know, you'll go to security conferences and you'll see panels and like, oh, what's the big trend? And I remember 2002 being on a panel and that question coming up, and many people said patch management, many people said this, but the real big one was digital trust, that the firewall, the human attack. Now the actual, it's getting past your firewall, going straight to the actual human layer 8 basically, right, and exploiting that. And so from that point on, it became, you know, a new way for these actors to get into networks, make entire businesses out of it. Obviously, you know, there's also the nation state side of it and agendas there for foreign countries. And over time, basically what occurred was that, you know, these firewalls and the logs and everything that they collected before, you know, they were so dependent on them blocking. But the reality is that now it's more about tracking and figuring out who's doing this and what are their capabilities. And so that you can kind of like take proactive steps into defending against that. And it's not the same kind of defense doctrine we used to have where, you know, we had our snort signatures up, we had our IDS configured, we had our firewalls go and we could put our feet up. It's not like that anymore. So now it takes a lot of investment and time in human intelligence to actually defend against these attacks.
You know, as you think about this whole process and we think about the president announcing about this new agency, I mean, what's your thoughts? I mean, we've had a number of new agencies come online since 2003, with 9/11 and everything else. DHS came online and yeah. The number of agencies that came online with that. You know, we've had the ODNI, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, now come online. We've had the National Counterterrorism Center, another new agency now. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm supportive of the idea of the concept of a centralized investment into cyber intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, like you said, this is the metaphorical equivalent to what the DHS was as a reaction to 9/11,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, of course, as that goes, there's going to be a lot of learning experiences, you know, some ups and downs, things like that. We've seen that with DHS and standards that, you know, as we've seen as the process of TSA develop and, you know, what to look for, what not to look for, how to improve intelligence, how to minimize, you know. The same here goes with this is an opportunity for what's been discussed. I think Obama's brought it up and many people have been kind of waiting for the real defense in problems like this that we're seeing today is ecosystem versus ecosystem. So this allows kind of like a centralized hub for building an ecosystem with industry, academia, government sharing, and so that there's like kind of like one direction there and a flurry of resources to go and focus on a transparent agenda. So this actually could be very good for us. I think we're going to have a lot of pitfalls in learning cases and things that we have to figure out along the way. But I think this is a very exciting maneuver. So.
You know, with this, as we look at this and kind of talking about that, and you knowing the industry, has there not, because, you know, there was always these dynamics. You had the CERT team, the computer emergency response teams. I mean, you know, has this not been something that had been done before? I know FBI had developed some cyber capabilities and they were supposed to be talking to the private industry. Was this a matter of that it was so disjointed amongst the federal government that, you know, there were too many players out there? Or what was it? I mean, was there a situation that, you know, like you said, we didn't have this concerted effort, or what was it?
Well, you know, I've been involved personally, and I know many other people have been involved in information sharing communities for cyber for many years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And watching that grow and watching the difficulties, there are things like how do you vet information? How do you handle confidentiality? Sensitive, information getting sense. Can we share this? Can we not share this? Who can we share with? You get all these problems, right? Now we have multiple organizations that are doing this. We have the NCFTA in Pittsburgh is doing some stuff with the FBI on cybercrime neutralization, and they have kind of a hub spoke model that basically allows for intelligence to be quickly put out there. And the FBI actually. It was called basically the extension they built into that on there and was called SurfU, which was it was kind of a fusion unit to focus on, like, you know, giving a drive and investment into cyber. And that was years ago. But then we still see these interesting things where Secret Service might not be working with the FBI on something, or you'll also have overclassification issues. For instance, you know, we on the commercial side might see that we have some commercial entity asking about, you know, information or IOCs, but then those are with IOCs being indicators of compromise. But then you see it getting classified, or the pieces that they have information and you have it's all compartmentalized and secret. So only people who have it are the only people that are walking into a SCIF, and you can't apply it on the commercial side, right? So it becomes very difficult. So this will be very interesting to see, because we have done this before and there's different levels of it. For instance, there's, you know, cybercrime communities out there. Obviously we've seen the InfraGuard program before in the past. We've seen the Electronic Crimes Task Force, ECTF, with the Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
I think this will probably give a global head to those initiatives and finally have something that can go and centralize and process and manage all of this information that's going on and everybody's agendas to do the same thing. I think we all have the same expectation. We now just need to clarify it with an actual transparent set of expectations. I think this new department will be crucial in defining that.
We're talking to Lance James. He is the head of cyber intelligence at Deloitte & Touche. He is the one who's leading up their efforts in terms of trying to find out who the threat is coming from and then try to deter that threat. We're talking about this new agency that the president has asked that is going to come on out, a new cyber intelligence agency that we are assuming is going to be under the Office of Director of National Intelligence. So we don't know, but we'll see how this happens. But we're talking about this, and we're talking about cyber threats and how do we defeat them? How do we deter them? How do we stop them? We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about cyber. We're talking about cyber intelligence to be to really kind of get down to some specifics. We're talking about the nature of cyber intelligence, an evolving field, whether it be a career field, an evolving field in our government, an evolving field in the private sector, where now we have cyber intelligence analysts and cyber intelligence specialists. You know, what is cyber intelligence? We're getting kind of the understanding of this new evolving field where people are actually now trying to be proactive and find out who these people are who are, you know, doing these horrible acts in terms of compromising people's systems and going into their emails and stealing financial information and getting classified information. Who are these people who are doing it and how can we stop them? We're talking to Lance James. He is the head of cyber intelligence at Deloitte & Touche, and they have been working on this for quite some time. He's been working on it for many, many years and has seen the field evolve, and he's given us a perspective of this new federal agency and also the field of cyber intelligence. Lance, in a dream world, utopia of cyber, what would this cyber intelligence agency kind of be composed of? I mean, who would be the people who would make this thing really work?
The hope I have to see in the long run is that this is going to be thought out from cradle to grave. Unfortunately, when we make government agencies like this, sometimes it's reaction right now. You know, mm-hmm. There's a rock through a window. We have a purpose. We got to do it. But what we're going to have to do is really start at the top with strategists, right? Like, actually, a lot of people think it's about analysts and get all the information and everything like this. But if you don't have a direction or a strategy, you know, if you go from the standard intelligence life cycle, I don't know if it's online, but you can find it at like places like the FBI.gov or CIA.gov. But the intelligence life cycle itself starts with planning and direction, mm-hmm. right? And so to build out any kind of intelligence operation, you're going to need to start there and kind of strategize. Now, in that, there are different sections that you need that will be covered. For instance, you know, there's operations, which basically handles just, you know, your day-to-day delivery, your making this actually work, the model that's going to happen, you know, and people that collectors that come in and collect and basically just pull in the information and manage that information. There's also going to have to be deconfliction teams. You know, when you're dealing with, a lot of industry out there doing their own thing, like maybe they're doing forum monitoring and they run a company that does that, or they're doing Twitter monitoring, or they're doing different intelligence gathering. Maybe some of them are deeper and more less OSINT, and maybe some are very OSINT. You got to have a deconfliction, like who's going to be working on what and who do we need to be reached out to? And can we also can get together the right people? So can we facilitate? So the first objective for this center should be to facilitate intelligence, right? Not try to create intelligence, not this. It's all about facilitation, right? And then the next step is also having support of analysts and people that can actually, you know, put the resources to take a look at this information and also build a stream of looking at like the information you're sharing has to go to maybe industry or energy, like different energy, like energy or banking or this and that. But be able to like almost create a sharing system that treats it like interdepartmental versus its separate industry companies or organizations, so that they can share resources and go back and say, well, I'm going to take this ticket. I'm going to work on this. I'm going to do this information because we have information here. And so that process is going to be an interesting piece, but it's going to be very important to have like this bi-directional, transparent communication that goes on between the, managing almost kind of like traffic lights. You know, you're going to manage the actual, all the information coming in and out. Who's got it? How do you prevent leaks? Now there's also going to be a vetting system that's involved in this, and that's going to be its own process. This is going to be a large endeavor, you know, and then on the other side, there's basically classical versions of intelligence, like for instance that the government, like for instance you see in DOD, like joint publications, focusing on building a threat intelligence team. The team has to be proactive in nature. They'll build out a threat research team. They have to focus on a goal of gaining adversary understanding, right? When they look at threat indicators today in the industry, a lot of people are just looking at IP addresses and and binary file names and like, you know, like these small indicators. But what they're really going to have to do is think bigger picture, focus on motivation, mm-hmm. objectives of gaining timeliness, understanding resources, understanding risk tolerance to your adversary, understanding the skills and methods that they're taking, understanding the actions, you know, and then there's also going to have to be a connection, obviously, with overseas, human and SIG intelligence. So that if there are actors overseas that if that there is intelligence on, that can be delivered over and managed in the actual center itself. But it's going to be a big road. But basically, I think that the biggest challenge is that military versions of intelligence or you know, the DoD's version of intelligence is slightly different than how commercial cyber intelligence or commercial intelligence is actually done. I mean, the agendas are also very different, right? Mm-hmm. So commercial agenda is way different than a defense agenda, you know? So that, those are the things that are, you're going to have people that actually have to be able to manage that on top of it, both in the strategy of like, how are we going to put this together? How are we going to make this operate correctly? At the top, it has to start as the culture has to be that way. And then on the bottom, you're going to build out a strong threat intelligence team to support this. So.
Sound like they may be calling you for a job. The president may mm-hmm. be calling you, Lance. but, you know, and with all of that, because you gave a lot of information in terms mm-hmm. of kind of a setup, and that sounds like a very, very robust operation. Quick right. question, in terms of the dynamics, because this is an evolving field, and I know I've read articles out there, and I want to kind of get your take about that. You know, sometimes we don't have those who are qualified. I mean, there's been issues. Do we have the people who are qualified to handle these cyber attacks? You mean, we don't have enough people who are cleared to handle this kind of stuff. A lot of the people are in the private sector rather than the government sector. What's your thoughts on that? Do we have the people who are capable of doing this, or is this a new kind of complete new training program that we need to implement? You know, I know we got the STEM programs and everything, the science, technology, engineering, math programs. You know, what is the human capital out here, and are they ready?
This is a very good question. Building a best-in-breed team is very difficult, and finding the resources. You know, it's a very competitive market right now, both in the private and public industry and sector right now. So, for instance, you'll find, example is malware reverse engineers, people who like analyze the bad like viruses and Trojans that to understand and glean intelligence from it. Those people are hard to hire, and the salary caps are pretty extensive. Like they're up there, and there are few and far between very good reverses. And I'm just using this as an example. But it doesn't mean they don't exist, but the selection process has to be, I'd say, a little bit more rigid. Also, when you brought up the clearances, there are a lot of people that have high clearances but do not have the knowledge set outside of their domain. So they may have military intelligence background, but do they have information security background? Like it's going to be interesting because a successful intelligence program has to bridge in hacker mentalities, like information security, like bringing hackers into the intelligence community, into the world there,
right.
Because their techniques and capabilities are different than your classical intelligence community thought process, right? And I've watched this personally be bridged, and it is a perfect marriage, right? But your hacker might, even though he's working for private industry or something, he may not be eligible for clearance or not want or be interested in clearance, you know. So there's this talent pool issue there where he's like, who do you have for handling the high side of information? And who do you have actually, developing the technologies, the innovations, the frameworks and the tools? Another big, big obstacle is going to be military intelligence versus that commercial intelligence perspective. There's a huge gap there. Right. You talk to someone from the background that might have has worked at Army intelligence or NSA, and then you bring them onto a commercial cyber intelligence team. Their knowledge is very, very specific, very precise, but it doesn't the languages that they're speaking are different than the people on the commercial side. Right. Also, on the commercial side, I'll be honest, the cyber intelligence concept, right, is still being defined. Hmm. Threat intelligence, the term of it only came out like probably 5 years ago in the industry. And so what I would originally call cyber counterintelligence, they now call threat intelligence, right?
Okay.
And everybody's definition is different, and you got markets out there trying to sell feeds. You've got everybody trying to do different things. Now you're going to have to bring everybody's ecosystem together. Maybe companies have to be less competitive, right, and start actually contributing to the center here, their tools and their innovations, and they all have to work and build their own ecosystem. And it's going to be very difficult because you have competing agendas in this industry, both in the commercial space as well as the government space.
We're talking to Lance James. He's the head of cyber intelligence at Deloitte & Touche. We're talking about the new cyber intelligence agency that President Obama has announced that will be developed. This is going to be an interesting development just because we're talking to Lance. There's so much that goes into cyber right now. It's not just a matter of getting a couple people who understand how to protect the network. There's so much more that goes into creating an agency like this and really working to stop this threat. It will be interesting how this thing plays out. Lance is giving us some unique perspective. When we come back, we'll be keep on talking about cyber intelligence and where it's going. What's it looking like from the government side? What's it looking like from the commercial side? And how do you bridge this gap? We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just starting to join us, you have been missing out on some great conversation. We've been talking about cyber intelligence. We've been talking about this new field. A lot of people haven't heard of it. It's been around for about 5 years right now, but it's really starting to take hold, especially now that the president has announced that he's developing a new cyber intelligence agency that's going to focus in on these cyber threats and not just protecting networks, but the motivations of these people. Who are these people? How do we get them? How do we go after them? And how do we stop them? You know, that is going to be the new reign of the cyber field. We're talking to Lance James. He's the head of cyber intelligence at Deloitte & Touche, and he's given us some perspective. He's been around in this field for many, many years, and he's seen the evolution of it, and he's now given us some perspective about this new agency and the field of cyber intelligence and where it's going. Lance, you know, you talked about, and interesting, you've talked about the I don't want to call it maybe disconnect, but the two ways in which people do business. You know, government does mm-hmm. business one way in terms of cyber and cyber intelligence. And then, you know, now we have, the commercial sector who's doing their thing. What is what's the differences so people can understand that? You know, what is the difference between commercial and how they're looking at cyber intelligence or cyber threats, and how is government looking at it?
Okay, so in the commercial side, their number one goal is to serve their clients, right? To provide solutions to their clients in the threat intelligence or cyber intelligence field, right? Now, there's also other sides of it. Part of it is they also need to make sure they get clients, right? And so part of that is marketing, right? You see a lot of cyber intelligence or cyber threat research papers written and marketed everywhere, and it's like things like attribution of an actor, and you see different callings out of a cyber threat actor, whether they're in China or in Iran or wherever. But this is kind of a trade-off, obviously, because in the commercial world, their marketing, that they kind of have to do it, get some attention, it gives them thought leadership, and that shows them they're in this game, right? Now, in the world of the government, secrets are your best friend, right? So, you know, the integrity of the intelligence community is extremely crucial. Trust yet verify, you know. And you can't afford to, the military doctrine, like, you know, you go on the J-pubs about cyberspace and cyber intelligence, and, they have, mission objectives. They have full manuals on deception management and operational deception management and all these different pieces, which is treated more like espionage and also, defense view for protecting the nation, right?
Right.
Which includes, techniques for warfare. Now, also, many of these documents, higher than the J-pubs, they're classified still, right? So there's also areas that maybe the NSA or other agencies view cyber intelligence or establish what they consider it, but they're not available to the public. So there's going to be an adjustment period because cyber intelligence in the commercial space, it's not as black and white. It's more flexible in some senses. But when you look at the government, maybe some of the work they're doing in espionage or the work that they're doing to defend them, the target might be someone dangerous and that could actually be, if the person working on it is compromised, it's an actual, there's a danger set to that person. So there's this bridge of, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but the commercial side is going to have to understand this is not a game. Mm-hmm. This is intelligence. This is a profession that has been around since the beginning of time.
Right.
And we can't sit there and just sell threat feeds and have the same agenda of selling stuff just because we want the money. But we have to make sure that our integrity is intact and that we are doing our part also with as the community and things like that. And, all companies need to make their money, but this is not something funny anymore. This is, there are kinetic effects that are happening so heavily right now,
right.
And it's only going to get more plausible. For instance, with the recent breaches, the ones that are wiping systems and stuff, It doesn't matter if that's a nation state, also a 15-year-old could do it. And that's what we have to be prepared for, is that the capabilities are out there for people to cause severe damage to our national security, our infrastructure, and our economy. And the commercial side has to sit there and get past the, we're just pleasing our clients and we're just, you know, we're making our revenue, but actually has to make sure that it's almost like they should follow a standard for intelligence to be working this way. That way there's like this guarantee of, I didn't go and buy some intelligence that didn't help me out or was a waste of my money or this or that. So, you know, unfortunately, there's going to be a mixed bag of people getting in this industry just because it's a big industry.
Right.
And it's hot right now. But the government's not looking at it that way. They're looking at it, we need to defend our country. So the commercial people that are working with them need to get into that attitude as well. So,
you know, I've had some interesting opportunities to see, even in previous years, to see how people can hack into either bridge systems or hack into infrastructure systems and take control over them. Part of this is I think that people look at it from a, you know, it seems it's kind of the movies, right? You know, this is, you know, this is something in the movies. It's not really that bad. It's not that really real, right? Where the public kind of hears it, but, it, you know, not necessarily taking it that serious. We get a couple, you know, hey, Sony was attacked, whatever, but they don't necessarily see the real effect of it. Maybe my identity was stolen, but you know, what does that really mean? Can you talk about how real is the threat that somebody could actually, you know, do something and, you know, destroy something, blow something up, take a hold of infrastructure or take people's, you know, identity, like you said, wipe systems and take people's identities and begin doing a whole bunch of nefarious stuff. How real is the threat?
Well, it's as real as what you see in the newspapers. Here's the problem with it before we get into how real is the threat. Mm-hmm. Because we were just talking about the commercial versus government, there's a lot of hype going on too. On the commercial agenda, we want people to be awake and this and that. Now, from the security community, people who've been like involved in this as a practitioner for 15, 20 years, they finally have the microphone and people are listening. Before, you know, 15 years ago, to tell someone there's, you know, a vulnerability on their systems, you know, it was like pulling teeth to have anybody listen to you. You know, now everybody's like, okay, you can't go into a major news site and not have the word hacking be on the front page somewhere, right? Or breach. The question is, are we becoming apathetic, you know, quickly to that because, you know, the breaches are becoming so common. But at the same time, we don't know what they're going to be doing with that data. So now if you look at it from 2003, how much data has been collected on us from overseas, both in the organized crime versus the nation states, the espionage that goes on, the whatever it is, there is so much data. No one understands how much has been collected in the last, like, you know, since the last decade alone, right? When I was working with, when we first started seeing like this kind of malware that would like go and exfiltrate and, you know, data, the systems in 2003, no one knew they were going on. They had thousands, I mean, like, I'm talking millions of credentials, millions of context information, very sensitive information in many, many environments, all the way down to government and energy. They had completely infected, like, and had access to systems all the way to government, all the way to commercial, financial, every industry. And that's 2003, right? And now we're seeing it so commonly, right? And this, you know, there's an ecosystem, a supply chain, there's an underground economy for this kind of information, whether it's more in the black market of intelligence or, you know, you can sell it off to a nation or you sell it off to someone for identity theft. But the reality is, you know, I'm having trouble trying to see what the internet's going to look like in 2030, mm-hmm. As hostile as it is right now. And we're seeing that the capabilities that are happening, you know, everything is connected to the internet, our phones. You know, I live in New York and I have to wait for people to move because they're staring at their interface and that interface is that's their world now. Right. So, when you see things like the Stuxnet and you saw, you know, like that, it proved that obviously you can cause kinetic effects and shut, you know, that mission objective, you know, if we imply or infer that mission objective was to shut down or push back a nuclear program, we saw that worked very successfully in some senses, you know. And then on the other side of it, you see the situation where we can, you know, I mean, today we're getting bomb threats and we saw, you know, threats that were similar to Al-Qaeda. And unfortunately, we don't even have a framework to decide the credibility of that or not. Right. We don't know if someone's on Twitter putting a bomb threat to an airline, if that's credible or not, if that guy has the capabilities of doing that. So what happens is you end up grounding planes, even if it was a prank. Right. So we're getting a mesh of motivation.
Which is happening.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. We're talking to Lance James. He is giving us some perspective. And Lance, I want to go into this deep. We got to take a quick break, but I want to go into this deeper about, you know, the threat and the real. And like you said, I mean, the evolution of this thing and how serious it is and how serious commercial companies now need to get on the same page with government of taking this serious and not just being about the profit dynamics. But everybody needs to be on the national security page, it seems like. Mm-hmm. We're talking about cyber intelligence. We're talking to Lance James. He is the head of cyber intelligence for Deloitte & Touche. And he's giving us some perspective about this this evolving situation with cyber and cyber intelligence and cybersecurity. Where are we going? How do we deal with it? And what's this going to look like in the future? We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about cyber. We've been talking about cybersecurity, cyber intelligence. We're talking about the new field of cyber intelligence. Not necessarily new in terms of kind of being around. It's been around for a few years now, but a lot of people are just starting to hear about it and starting to understand what cyber intelligence is. We're talking to the head of cyber intelligence for Deloitte & Touche, Lance James. He's been around this field for quite some time, seeing the evolution of it, seeing the dynamics of it going from cybersecurity to cyber intelligence. And we're starting to also talk about where is it heading beyond that. Lance, you know, we've been having this kind of conversation about the real threat. And you know, some of it is definitely, like you said, can be some hype. And then some of it definitely is real. You know, we've seen definitely where people are putting bomb threats on, whether it be a Twitter or social media. And you know, the thing is, we can't take any of these threats lightly, because if it is real, then, you know, we don't want to ignore it. But they do have some economic cost to them. You know, a plane has to be stopped. You got to pull people off. You shut down, you know, a whole corridor of an airline and everything else. There's costs to all these different things. You know, it is when we talk about the motivations of this kind of stuff, and we talk about, you know, who is doing it. When you look at the threat, who is it? Is it? I mean, are we seeing more of the pranksters? Are we seeing more nation state actors? Are we seeing people who, you know, someone's paying them to do this? Say, listen, you know, I want to drive such and such cost down, or I want to, you know, take their they're going to do an IPO, but I want to ruin this, or whatever the case is. What are we seeing in terms of the threat? Who are some of the people who are really out here on who are doing these things?
Okay. I don't know, for some of the viewers that may have a background or understanding about counterintelligence and motives, let's just start with the four main motives, right? The motivators: money, ideology, coercion, you know, compromise, or ego, right? So let's put the coercion compromise one away for a while, because it's a more complicated one. But let's start with money, ideology, and ego, right? So money, you know, as we saw from 2003 and up, we kind of first saw it coming out of like Eastern Bloc, or, you know, Russian underground businesses and Russian business networks. We saw, you know, a financial motivation to hit our banks, you know, with phishing and malware and all these. You know, the 2003 is kind of when the cybercrime kind of came onto the scene in the way that it was. You could look at it and go, this is going to be prolific, right? Everybody, hold on to your seats now. Then, you know, so that's always been coming. Now, unfortunately, you know, there's two major components in power. One is money, and the other is influence. So money is going to, for these people, is a resource that's available to them. And obviously, a lot of actors out there made it motivated by money, indirectly and directly. And so obviously we saw the, you know, banks today are still dealing with phishing and malware bank information stealer type, you know, viruses that focus on stealing financial information and identities, right? And that business is going to be booming, and it's going to continue booming, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to continue there. And then we have this cross-section of people are talking about, nation states, on the technical term, advanced persistent threats, right? And that those type of actors are not always necessarily advanced, but they're basically believed to be what I would consider more, there's a human behind the wheel. It's more organized. It's not always advanced, but it's more organized as a persistent threat. And it's focused on an agenda to get into your system and get something specifically, whether it's intellectual property or PII data or PHI data or, you know, recon. It depends on their mission. If they're doing recon, they're coming in, they're getting as much data and getting out. They may not want the credit card information, but they may want other information that is as private and can collect information on that. You know, then you have these hacktivists, you know, and some of it's worse because if you think of gangs, you think of your chaotic groups and your organized groups, you have this chaos going on. When we saw Anonymous and we saw Lulzsec and all that, we see basically what we would consider in the government side an insurgency. But unfortunately, we don't have a counter cyber insurgency program because it's an unexplored area comparably to obviously standard insurgencies, right? So some people would say we're in kind of a fourth generation warfare type asymmetrical, right? So we have insurgencies like hacktivists and groups that are just teenagers that are going to use political like excuses to do stupid stuff. So, but what's happened is all the tool sets are available for all the different parties now. So whatever the motivation is, or, you know, for instance, I'm honestly more scared of teenagers than I am nation state in my system because the unpredictability of the outcome and the impulsive behavior, you know, and then you have some of these kids that don't even do for that, just doing it for ego. Right. You know, and then you have things like obviously the Snowden situation where, you know, it's that one's questionable. Was he recruited or was there money involved or was there right. just his ego or just, you know, his ideologies? Right.
Right.
So this cross base of three types, money, ideology and ego, the techniques are starting to bear out. For instance, a good example is organized crime used to be quick and fast, get in there, get out and get money and opportunity and then run another campaign in the next month. Right. And do it again, recycle. But what we saw with breaches like APT nation states is that the actual breach times would be very long, like up to 9 months. And so we saw organized crime, like basically adapting nation states like low and slow style. This is what we saw with like a lot of the point of sale malware that would, you know, like hit all the retail brick and mortar online shop retails that are out there when all the breaches that hit them. That's an APT technique. That's an actual nation state style technique, but used by organized crime. And so they're learning from each other. And so the cross sections of dealing with these threats is only going to get more difficult. Some of the TTPs or what they call techniques, tactics, and procedures will look the same across the board. And then when you're working in intelligence, one thing you have to remember is also, is there going to be false flags? So as much as commercial people publish, you know, commercial industry publishes articles on attribution and signatures and all these defenses, well, that means the bad guys, the actors also are aware of them. So are they going to try to frame each other and false flag and put fake information, knowing how the researchers work and to make them have to go down rabbit holes? So it's a very complicated set of three major motivators: money, ideology, ego. But the tool sets and the complicated agenda stuff, and then obviously foreign policy, if it's nation state, how do we take action? You know, all these questions. Those motivators and those actors are the big three big ones. But, you know, you also worry about that resentful inside employee as well. And that seems to be that can cause a lot of damage. Obviously, we saw the Snowden incident and it burst into like, you know, it signified a change, or we see WikiLeaks and we see that it signified a change.
Right.
In how we understand our information and how it's being protected. So.
You know, got about 60 seconds, Lance. What keeps you up at night?
very good question. What keeps me up alive is trying to come up at night is trying to solve this problem, not the way we're all thinking, but it's got to be something else. Like, for instance, we're trying to solve this problem, but we're still in the reactive state. Right. Like it. I mean, no disrespect, but we should have had a center like this a while ago, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we're all kind of catching up and trying to realize what we needed to be doing. And now that is I spend time trying to figure out, is there a better way we can do this that we can finally get ahead of the threat? So I spend that kind of time trying to theorize on ways we can do that and improve that process.
You know, when we think about this, there's so much that goes into it. And you know, a lot of companies who, whether it be a Target, whatever the case is, a lot of them really, it kind of, they don't want people to know how much they're being targeted. Is that correct? I mean, so we also have to overcome people being a little bit more open about the nature of the threat for their own industry. Is that true?
Yeah, it gets really difficult because you have well, share indicators, share us information, but then you have the NDAs and confidentiality and also the image protection of
the brand,
of the situation, right? Also, you have investigations. I mean, certain things, for instance, we've seen with investigations that could publicize, everybody's waiting. Sometimes when it's too much early news, it can cause a bit of a distraction from the investigation. Everybody's coming up with their own views, even though they don't have the actual information. If the investigation is classified, and then everybody's like thinking, oh, well, you know, they get into conspiracy theories because they believe, oh, well, we don't have enough information. It's a very complicated setup individually. Like, each case is so different. Like, you know, maybe it's good for you not to disclose that this organization is breached at this moment, or maybe it's better, right? And so those decisions on why we may do this or why we may not do that, or exposure or open attribution, and how does that work, and does it work well? All of this stuff's being played with, and it's a subject for debate across the board to many cyber intelligence experts.
We've been talking to Lance James. He is the head of cyber intelligence at Deloitte & Touche. They deal with this, and he's staying up at night trying to think about this threat, trying to get ahead of the threat. We seem to have been behind for quite some time, being reactive rather than being proactive. But hopefully with not only a person like Lance taking on this mission, but also now maybe the creation of this new agency, maybe we can get ahead of it, and maybe hopefully we can stop it or at least calm it down to where we have it under control. Thank you so much, Lance. We're going to have to definitely have you back. This is an issue we could talk about for hours. Wish we had more time, but we're going to have to keep on discussing it. And thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.